Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
And getting into kind of a unique discussion this week
right. On
our show. It's unique assets in a trust and how to take care of those issues and properties. And are people sometimes unique assets?
Right, yes. they may have the unique personality for the unique assets. But when I find something that a client holds in their asset values, there tends to be a much, much longer conversation. And there tends to also be a desire to be very specific with these types of assets. So when someone becomes very specific, then obviously we need to take a little more time, a little more energy to sit down and really work out exactly what their vision is for these type of unique assets. Not everything fits within a certain subsection of language. As a matter of fact, I would propose that not much fits within a standard templated document. That's why we do individual plans. Each one looks different than the other one that I just created. Now, of course, there are sections that are similar. So if I have to empower a trustee, I have to give them banking powers, I have to give them investment powers, powers to compensate, real estate investment powers, all these different powers a trustee needs to hold. So if we were to look at my documents, maybe that section looks very similar one document to another because it's less unique. It doesn't fit exactly what the client needs. Now, there can be exceptions to that, specifically some of these unique assets that we're going to be talking about, which is there may be additional authorities or powers that we need to give with even within that section to accomplish the client's vision and goal. So I propose it's very difficult to create an estate plan that looks like your next door neighbors. As a matter of fact, that's what templated documents do. You take off the first page where the names and the families are listed. You take off the last page, which is your signature. And most templated documents look very similar in between. Mm. And I would want to ask, how in the world can your document look exactly the same as your next door neighbors when you don't have the same finances, you don't have the same family dynamics, you don't have the same individual assets, children or no children, personalities within the family, addiction behaviors, and the list goes on and on. And so that's the unfortunate part of what most estate planning does, Mark, and you've heard me talk about this for years, which is if it uses a templated document, then really what you're saying is that I'm exactly the same as everybody else, and that is simply not the truth.
So not just the online approach to this, but even a lot of financial advisors use this same, just a templated thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, financial advisors wouldn't, but yes, unfortunately, many attorneys do. Many attorneys utilize templated documents. I think I've told the story many times about my own father-in-law, where after I had moved back from law school back into the area, because I was going to be focusing on estate planning, I reviewed my father-in-law and my mother-in-law's documents. And unfortunately, my father-in-law's document said, "I leave everything to myself."
What was the idea behind that?
Well, the problem was is that an estate planning attorney used a templated document, and they did my mother-in-law's first. So when she passed away, she goes, "Oh, I leave everything to my husband," and they used his name, and then the same document was used, and so
they just changed names, but they missed that name.
And so ultimately, my father-in-law was leaving everything to himself. Oh, that doesn't work if you die. So templated documents, even coming out of a law office, I just have a difficulty with standard, the same cookie cutter document. That's not what you need. So Everybody has a unique situation, a unique story. We are created uniquely. So therefore, how can a one-size-fit-all in estate planning? And the answer is it just simply cannot. So therefore, if it's not me, find an attorney that you can blend with and that you can trust, but make sure they are not using just a standard templated document that they're going to create something specifically for you, for your family, for your dynamics, for your concerns, for your assets. And because we are all uniquely created and we're not the same as our next door neighbor, then we need to have an estate plan that is specifically for us. And that kind of leads us back into today's conversation, which is, well, there's unique things, unique assets that people possess and own that take much longer or a deeper dive into a discussion to make sure that when we create the plan, it's just not simply passing on to pass on.
So more than just like the stamp collection or the coin collection.
Well, those can be a part of it. What if those were
or the baseball card collection, which can be worth a fortune?
Yeah, they can be. And what if those things came generationally? And what if what if that symbolizes a majority of your childhood? And so yes, those can be a part of the discussion of why we give certain things to certain people. And why do we have unique assets that we need to get to a certain place? So yes, when we have unique assets, and we'll start breaking down some of them, then it really does come into play of who is the right person to receive that. So what if it was a coin collection? What if it was baseball cards? I remember as a kid collecting baseball cards, walking down the street, going to the Manhattan drugstores where I went down in Des Moines. And on the corner, I can't believe my parents let me cross the road as busy as it was. But that's another story. Going down and using my allowance to pick up a 10-cent baseball card pack and collecting them and trading them. And so that could be something that if I had a reasonable collection that could be very important to me that I might want to get to very specific hands who would appreciate the story of why those cards were held on to for a long period of time, who have similar interests. And maybe that then gave me a love of baseball. And so I start taking certain people to baseball games. And so there's far more than just a value that I can get for selling an asset with many of these things. A lot of times it is deeply emotionally driven that there's a family story behind the asset. And so it takes something very specific to get to a very specific individual to make the plan work. And that just can't happen in a templated document.
Or making sure a specific individual does not receive that asset.
Or that because they won't appreciate
it. Yeah, we had my aunt's estate had very definite stipulations about a Persian rug she had.
Yes.
She says, don't let this one greedy uncle get his hands on that because he already has 100 of them and he doesn't appreciate it.
Yes.
And sure enough, he did. He came and wanted that. And we hadn't looked at the trust very closely. And she had definite specific ideas about that rug.
Yes.
It caused a big deal. So
Yeah. And so getting something to a specific person who could caretake that and would appreciate it, or somebody who is not going
in
to appreciate
though,
it.
In hindsight, though, we think maybe we should have let him have it because he did appreciate it. That rug is still sitting in our closet.
Yes, and sometimes that happens too. So, but these need to be addressed because here, let me tell you what happens if these items are not addressed. Which is one of two things can happen. Number one, they are just simply divided. So I've had multiple clients with coin collections, and they were not such a family heirloom that it needed to be passed to a specific person. So at the end, what happens is that the kids get around and they just start dividing things up and they start breaking up the asset. I've seen this happen multiple times with farmland. With other property to where multiple people start owning it and And then it starts to dilute, or oil rights and mineral rights. It's amazing at how small fractional shares people own of mineral rights. They never want to give them up, but they own small fractional shares. Why? Because it was never really designed in a good, strong estate plan to keep them together. And then who was going to then manage that and have so that they can remain as a full unit instead of all these fractional shares? That can happen with real property. It can happen with card collections, coin collections, and multiple other things. Or nobody knows what to do with them. So at the end of the day, everyone gets fed up and just goes, forget it, sell it. And now nobody. Now it leaves the family when that was never the intent or the desire. And last, and even the worst case scenario, is that I've seen unique assets start family fights. And I've told people, I would rather die with nothing than to have assets or a unique asset or something start to tear and fragment my girl's relationship. So good estate planning will create a full vision of what we're supposed to be doing with assets, who's supposed to get them, how we are to keep things together, such as making sure that things don't get broken down into fractional shares and split up, or things that don't leave the family that we're supposed to stay with the family, and worst case scenario, keep things peaceful because we have very specific instructions that assets are to move by. So good estate planning, while I can't resolve hurt feelings and I can't resolve family pain and the dynamics that you've already created in your family, you can go to the mirror and talk to yourself about all those issues. Good estate planning will help in making sure that there is peace in the family and that whatever your vision is with unique assets, that it is fulfilled properly. So let's take a look at some unique assets that people may have.
Okay, start with first unique assets before we go to break here.
Yeah. So some of the things that I see that people have very specific desires, believe it or not, the first one might be a little bit shocking, which are timeshares.
Timeshares?
I told you it could be shocking.
There was a timeshare that still hasn't resolved in our...
And that's a good reason not to get them. So,
right.
So number one, don't do it. But if you already have... there are some people that of greatly value timeshares because this is where the family went and had vacations.
So
this is where, even though they suck you dry at the end of the day, this is where family memories are created. And if the children have the financial capacity to go ahead and start taking over things that are going to have a cost associated with them, such as a timeshare, then it could be something that becomes an asset that you want to pass on. Now, most people are looking to get out of timeshares. I get it. And so, fine. I understand that thought. But there are others that really do value the experiences, the memories, and want to have that continue. So they want to pass something on. And now the big deal is, what if we want to pass that on? And what if the family wants to retain those, but there is no one in the family who can afford the continued rising dues that are going to be there every single month? Well, now we need to start creating a plan that sets aside funds and sets aside the actual timeshare or property to ensure that it can be financially affordable to everybody, and so that there is no fighting or no hurt feelings, that there's a way for the family to use that collectively instead of just one person kind of managing it or taking the run at it. So we'll talk about a couple other similar properties when we get back from break that have the same type of characteristics and some of the same concerns.
How to handle those unique assets in your estate planning. And you like the way Paul thinks about this and other issues having to do with estate planning. People want your help. Paul, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at how to handle unique assets in your estate plan. And Paul has been starting to enumerate those, and he starts off with the timeshare.
I know, out of all things, right?
Of all things.
Yeah.
But you know, this has been an issue in our own family. Just exactly the scenario you said. The family vacations were always held at this timeshare location in Pacific Grove, California, right near Monterey.
Yeah,
and
beautiful
I
place,
still
right?
Jenny and I, our opinion was we don't want to have anything to do with it because it's just an obligation.
Right.
But the brother did
want
to keep it, and so he said, well, have at it.
Yeah.
And yet I think he still let it go, so we're not sure. We don't ask. We don't want to know.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, whether it's a timeshare, whether it's a vacation property, there's some people own places in other states that they get away to. There are small homes on a lake or other things that have the same type of feel and the same type of family sentimental value. And yes, there could be a true value to some of those properties as well. But the bigger issue is, how are we going to afford making this work? So, in a well-designed estate plan, having a property held off and used collectively instead of just splitting it up could be, I'm not saying it is the best way because each family is different, so I can't make some blanket statement, but holding it to the side so that there is an opportunity to be managed by the family and then adding funds to that set-aside asset. So when we use a revocable living trust, these things are not possible with a will. A will package simply gives things to the right people. However, a trust is a holding container. Mm. So it can hold for longer term a piece of property, such as a vacation property and or a timeshare or something similar. And we can also put money into it, finances, so that the property can be supported. So what would it look like if we had a vacation property in Chelan or a timeshare or whatever the case may or may not be? But now, not only is it held aside as a family unit, but it's also given financial support so that no one in the family has to worry about who's going to pay for this. How are we going to do this? Because oftentimes there is a financial inequity in families, even after an inheritance. Mm. So if there's one sibling or only a couple siblings that have better paying jobs or have done better financially than others, then could that potentially create a concern that I'm the one who always has to pay for this thing and you guys just get to use it? Or it can become a manipulative issue. Well, I'm paying for it. So it depends on the family dynamics, but setting aside something with potential finances could be a really strong strategy to make sure that the client's objective of holding on to that property is actually fulfilled. Mm. And then what if there are some siblings who live out of state. So I have this in family dynamics as well, which is, well, I think a couple of my kids would use this property, but I have one child who lives on the East Coast and they're not going to fly back here every year. So now there's an inequity in the usability of the property long term. So there's ways to work out a scenario where that can be managed and appeased.
In the trust.
Yeah. So that one child does not feel like, well, but part of my inheritance is sitting over here and everyone else is getting to use it, but I'm not.
Right.
And again, this comes down to the client knowing the family dynamics, maybe even having family conversations, again, depending the family, whether or not they're good communicators, and that we can work out different solutions to what seems to be a very easy request, which is, I just want to hold on to this property so everyone can use it. But what about all the different layers of, but who can use it? Who can't use it? How are we going to financially afford it? How do we manage it? Who is going to manage it? Who's the one who's going to go up and fix the plumbing when the plumbing breaks? These are all questions surrounding property that if you have something that you want to hold on to, these questions rarely get answered. Instead, it actually gets ignored in most estate plans, which is, it's just another asset. So then everybody owns it collectively, and now the squabbling can start to take place because we have different ideas, different purposes, different financial structures, different usages, and now we haven't resolved anything. Good estate planning has a better opportunity to create harmony and create a full vision when that's good estate planning done and when the right questions are also asked.
Better opportunity to get the harmony, but still human nature is human nature.
I know.
People.
I did not raise your kids. I raised mine. And so therefore, I take responsibility for my own family dynamics, but I can't take responsibility for yours. I can just do really good legal work to try to accomplish the vision that you have with unique assets. Here's another one that I mentioned earlier, which is farmland. And so we're going to stay in real property, and then this might be just the show that we have here today. But farmland is something that specifically my clients that live east of the mountains or come from the Midwest, this is something that they may have. And there may be a very, very strong emotional connection to farmland. I work closely with an attorney back in Illinois and in southern Illinois, and he almost exclusively deals with the farming community. And so I listen to some of his stories and get his assistance in when I have farmers and or orchardists or people who own farm interests, whether it is, someone else working the land. And this is one thing I can tell you is that there is a deep emotional connection to land, to property. So protecting real estate is very, very strong family dynamic. I'll even also throw in rental properties. So I have many clients that own rental properties, and because they have been able to have a good living off of multiple properties, then that's what they believe in. That's what they believe that they want to pass the legacy to their own children to be, which is, if I hand them, 6, 8, 10 different homes, or I hand them this small apartment complex or whatever the case may or may not be, this has been a really good investment for me, and it's provided well for the family. But here's the problem with both farmland and with rental units, which is, who is going to take over and step in your shoes? So if you're actually working the land, or if you're the one actively managing the apartment complex, is there's someone in the family who is going to work the land, who's going to take over the farm? Is there someone in the family who's actually going to have the same skill set to manage the properties? So unfortunately, some of the ideology that I see coming from clients is, I want to pass this this property to the next generation because it's been so important to me. Or gosh, with farmland, it's been handed generation to generation. But now we run into one really, really big problem right out of the gate, which is there's no one else in the family who can do what the client does.
Right.
So therefore, now we have to start thinking through what does it mean to actually pass on something that is very valuable. And this could have extreme monetary value as well as very deep emotional value. So now working in the dynamics in estate planning of finding the right family dynamic and ability to pull that together. So oftentimes with these types of real estate endeavors, there might be someone who does have the skill set or the desire to learn, but not everyone in the family does. So again, we're now back to this almost like the vacation property, which is one set of groups in the family can have an interest in it, but then the others want nothing to do with it and or want to disassociate or have never been interested in it. So therefore, how do you create the balance of really taking something that may have the most value in the estate monetarily and work it out amongst the entire family when there's only one person or potentially no one to actually manage it and move it forward and keep the value and keep the income moving forward for the family's sake. So now we have passion and value, but nobody to really actually hand it to. These are some of the difficulties, and there's no simple answer other than we got to get together. We have to have a conversation and deeper conversations and sometimes family conversations to make an estate plan actually look and work exactly as you need it to. No cookie cutter would ever be able to manage these type of issues.
Okay, that unique asset, you need a unique plan, and Paul Grant wants to help you with that. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.